Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
Welcome to the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Yes, welcome. And we're so happy for two reasons. Reason A is because we are now proud members of Pantheon Podcasts, the music podcast network.
Nice. And reason B is because we're talking to Jefferson Starship. We continue our talk. Did I get that correct? We are talking.
We are continuing.
We're still
our
talking.
Talk
we're still
with
talking.
Jefferson Starship.
These guys were great. We're having a lot of fun with them and learning a lot about their history and with everything that's new with the band. So let's get right into it, shall we?
We shall.
So that is exciting. You're talking about playing these. I went through your set list, and you're, you know, like a new band, you're playing songs that have not been released yet to an audience that. That doesn't know these songs. So that's kind of exciting. Did you get feedback, like how to improve these songs, or what, you know, were you able to fine tune these songs by playing it, testing it on the road?
I think we played it different every night. What are we waiting for?
Yeah,
exactly. It came out.
We've been playing that for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's really evolved.
Yeah.
It's kind of a benefit.
But the recording that's on the record that was like, from the jam session,
yeah,
a mic, you know, one stereo mic hanging from the ceiling, and that was the drum track.
You got the
and
drum was, track from that.
It was like, I mean,
that is amazing.
It's so amazing. It's like so
that is so amazing.
It had such a vibe. We tried to go record it in a studio and replace it, but it didn't have a vibe.
Those drums have a great mojo. That's what it is. The one yeah. mic mojo.
Yeah. So one mic on the drum. How did that come about? Because usually you have to mic all, you know, every single drum.
Well, we were just having a jam session. This was the initial thing where all of these took place, and it just
so
was
we're
like
recording
we captured
it to see what was going to come out of it. So David
listen back. Yeah.
Had a mic hanging from the ceiling. That I don't know. Is it always there? Maybe.
it's a stereo ribbon mic. Yeah.
So we were in the room where David is sitting right now.
Yeah.
It's got a high ceiling, and that's great for tracking drums. So he had this mic hanging down, and Donnie picked up his mallets and started playing that drum groove.
Kind of tribal thing, yeah.
The tom groove, and the whole song grew out of that. And
what are we waiting for?
The mic captured that, and it's unbelievable that it ended.
Rest is history.
Yeah.
We can't explain it. That song was meant to be, but how it started was pretty amazing.
That's pretty incredible, considering how much time you spend in a studio miking drums correctly.
Yeah,
we did that on all the other songs.
Yeah. We wanted to record it with an old boombox, you know, but we didn't have one, so we used a mic.
That would give it flavor. And definitely.
So I also heard you got that title from a member of Jefferson Starship Airplane. What are we waiting for? Is that a catchphrase or how'd that come about?
That was a Paul Kantner thing. I mean, I don't know how long he had said it before I came back to the band, but I noticed it right away. There was, you know,
a lot more when you showed up somehow.
Yeah, I mean,
it's always the driver again.
You never knew as far as, you know, we kind of had the core of what we were going to do on stage, but you never knew if Paul was going to call off some song that maybe I didn't fucking know. Excuse me.
That's all right. You can curse.
It's a podcast.
We're all adults here.
And I mean, he would do kind of this pose, you know, what are we waiting for? But I remember most of the time in between songs, he's trying to get us to do a song, mostly my attention, and saying, what are we waiting for? He'd come up on the drum riser and kind of get in my ear and say, what are we waiting for? He had kind of a weird, deep voice. And it kind of went into this little joke where we always kind of said that to each other. What are we waiting for? I don't do hugs. Oh, stop. You know, and all the little things that Paul would say and do and the Paulisms. And I came up with kind of a melody for those words. What are we waiting for? And kind of a little thing on the bridge. And Kathy just ran with it and came up with great words. And it turned out to be as silly as the idea is in how it kind of started, for me anyway. It's amazing what it turned into. But what are we waiting for came from Paul about telling me, you know, do you not know this? What are we waiting for? I go, no, I don't know this. What is this? And so I don't know. It's a weird explanation of kind of that spectrum of where he came from and who he was. And that was a Paulism. What are we waiting for? That turned into, what are we waiting for? The song.
And that's
Kathy,
a really nice tribute.
Kathy again wrote some great words.
Yeah, that's a great tribute.
Yeah, so
we love him. We miss him.
Yeah, that's great that he's in the studio with you when you create this.
He's definitely around. I mean, we feel him all the time.
Mm. He's 100% the inspiration for this record from beyond. And I personally don't believe that death is the end. And I think Paul is still out there. And I absolutely think he's working on this record with us.
Saying, and, what are we waiting for?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's really, I mean, it feels really magical the way it's all come together and the timing and everything. And, you know, we went through a little rough period after he passed away, and it was a hard, you know, rebuilding for us. And, you know, this record is important for us to, you know, assert that we are Jefferson Starship. You know, this is our band. We deserve to be here. We belong here. And this is the new music, and we're bringing in the past, the originators who have given it to us, and including our dear David, who's with us and continuing to go. And we're going to keep going forever.
I love that.
Until, yeah, we definitely have Grace's blessing.
You know, the Starship comes and takes us away.
Yeah.
Well, I always kind of looked at it as kind of like, you know, I grew up loving the Los Angeles. I'm sorry, I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up loving the Los Angeles Dodgers in the 70s.
Oh,
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're a Giants fan.
I'm sorry.
Don't ruin it now.
I'm sorry. We were having a loving moment here, but I still, you know, Steve Garvey is no longer playing first base for the Dodgers, and yet I still love the Dodgers. I still follow them. I don't know. I knew who the
Penguin was. Oh, remember the Penguin?
That was Ron Say.
Ron Say. Ron Say. That's right.
Now we got Justin Turner, but
it is what it is.
It is
so
what it
is. You're comparing the Dodgers to Jefferson Starship.
I'm just saying comparatively, or like any sports team, you follow a team because you love them. You follow the Starship because you love everything from six. You know, everything they created from Woodstock on to today. So I think that's wonderful. It's, you know, you guys clearly have that spirit going.
And the rule is we always put Jefferson right in front of the Starship. You know, people say Starship, but, you know, which is, we understand they mean well, but, you know, we are the Jefferson Starship.
No, Starship conjures up a whole different band. You know?
Yeah. And I was in that band from the beginning till close to the end. Just a different direction. You know, I was talking about it yesterday. On the interview, when I joined the band, it was Jefferson Starship and Paul and Grace and everybody was there, and a great, great band. And then it just kind of went a whole different direction, and Paul was not having any of it. And, you know, one by one, people got disinterested, and there was new producers and songs being sent from who knows where to maybe be on the record. And there was no, really no getting together and writing. It was just a whole different vibe. I mean, I always say it was a great time. Mm-hmm. But I always knew that there was no substance to any band, especially that band, to not still have some type of piece of what it was in the beginning, like this band does. And we do this without even trying. Mm-hmm. The Starship was, it just kind of went, I mean, it has a lot to do with who's running the show and producing and who wants to be in charge and not a whole lot of communication. I'm not saying the whole thing was a nightmare because it wasn't. I mean, things like that, you know, you look back on and learn from and you go, thank God for that. It was fun. I mean, you know, we sold a lot of records, but it was nothing that was very real to me and some of the other guys in the band. And it just kind of went its own way and kind of, as we say, the ship was sinking.
Hey, I have to say, as a fan at the time.
Yeah. It was good.
I loved those records. I didn't.
Yeah.
I was young.
I'm not saying anything against those songs and those records.
We didn't know.
From my perspective, as a young fan who was, you know, 13 or 14 when I discovered Jefferson Airplane, I didn't mind at all. I was excited that the band that I was really into was putting out new music. And
yeah.
It was getting played on the radio.
Exactly.
That was exciting. And I got to see you guys in concert.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Where was that? Can you tell us where?
In 1983 at the Holiday Star Theater in Merrillville, Indiana.
That was Jefferson Starship.
And I was not old enough to drive. My our friend's older sister drove us to Indiana, and my parents let me go out on a school night. It was a big deal. And we were like in the very farthest back of the balcony. But it was Donnie, David, Grace, Paul, Pete Sears, Craig Jacquiso, and is that everybody?
Mickey Thomas.
Amazing.
I saw that same tour in San Francisco that in like March of 83.
Yeah, it was a hell of a band. That was a hell of a band.
It's amazing.
Both of us saw Jefferson Starship for the first time the same year. Yeah. And it was one of my first concerts I ever went to, for sure.
Yeah, it was like my fourth concert after The Who and AC/DC and Ozzy Osbourne.
Those were great times, man. Those were great times.
Yeah. Whatever happened to those guys either? I've never heard those bands.
Meet you guys back then.
Imagine that all these years later.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. Here we are.
Okay, we're talking with David Freiberg, Kathy Richardson, Donnie Baldwin, Chris Smith, and Jude Gold of Jefferson Starship. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
On the What Difference Does It Make podcast with Jefferson Starship.
All right. So speaking of being a kid and hearing Starship for the first time, David.
Jefferson Starship.
David, you have to tell me about the Star Wars Holiday Special because I know. Can you tell me, do you have any remembrances of being on that, being part of that? Were you able to interact with any of the Star Wars people or anything?
Absolutely none. We were there at Universal Studios and Burbank. Nothing was going on in the whole soundstage except they were figuring out a way to film us doing that one song that was going to show up on a little laser player in the middle of the movie.
Light the Sky on Fire is what you play.
Nobody else was there.
tell the story about the microphone. That's the best ever.
Oh yeah, let's see. Marty was in the band then. That was probably the last thing he ever did until he played with Paul in the 90s.
What's the microphone story?
The microphone story. Yeah, well, they gave Marty, who was the lead, this like rod of wood that was painted green, you know, so it would, you know, that was like a green screen so they could make it into whatever it was, you know.
A lightsaber.
It was a
lightsaber.
It was a saber microphone. And, you know, everybody else was singing backgrounds. They gave me, I was playing some kind of weird, what do you call it? A keytar.
It was a keytar. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Totally 70s. You can't get any more.
Let's
70s
bring that back. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Please do.
And the Wookiee costumes.
No, we were just kind of, I don't know, weird costumes. I don't think they were any Wookiees or anything. Anyway, but Paul got really annoyed that he didn't get a green microphone. And I don't want to tell this story.
Why? It's hilarious. It's so hilarious. And, it's so and rock and roll.
And so he says, if I don't get one of those, I'm not playing. And he went back and sat in the trailer.
I mean, you got to admit, it's pretty cool. It looks like a lightsaber, and you sing it.
Yeah. That is so funny.
I want one.
I guess they got him.
I do too.
I guess they got him one because he did it, but you never saw it in the did you?
What are we waiting for?
That's right. There you go.
We're waiting for a saber mic.
What are we waiting for?
I will not play.
Entire film crew. And Paul won't play unless he gets his green microphone.
Right, you got the whole state.
They're like, but we didn't make lighter, lighting, we only made one.
We got everybody. And we they're only, sitting around twiddling their thumbs for 45 minutes.
I will not play.
They had to go to the prop shop and build him a new one because we only made one. It's
Lucasfilms, they could do that. Come on.
And that seems fair. I mean, you are Jefferson Starship.
Hilarious. That's the ultimate Paul Kantner right there.
That's it. Paul Kantner. I love it.
That's him, man. His motto was F you. We do what we want.
Why are we here?
So do you still have it? That's what I want to know. David, do you still have the microphone, the lightsaber?
No, oh, that belonged to property.
Oh, you should.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't steal it?
I did have a fun time today pulling that up and watching
it. That was all I ever saw. I don't think I ever even bothered to watch it.
Oh, it's on YouTube.
As is
Kathy singing a kid song on Nick Jr.
What am I singing?
I saw you on Nick Jr. You're singing like Rock and Roll Freeze Tag or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That is the best.
It is the best.
There are some other songs that I sing that are semi-anonymous because my face isn't on them, but some other Nick Jr. stuff about ducks and fruit salad. There's a lot.
Yummy. We have kids.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
But Freeze Dance is so cool because, A, it's a great song, and, B, you're just starring in the scene with all these Muppets all around you. I mean, I don't know if they're technically Muppets.
No.
But these puppets.
Yeah.
Still counts.
They are. They are technically. I mean, it's all the same.
It's Henson.
Puppeteers are from. They all worked on Sesame Street. They were their own.
So cool.
They made their own production company called Spiffy Pictures.
Yeah.
And I did some stuff, a bunch of stuff for them. And they did Jack's Big Music Show that I was on. Yeah. And I had a few on-camera episodes. And then I was a voice of Jack's mom on every episode. Jack! I based it on my sister. Yeah. Jack! Come on. We've got to go to pole vaulting lessons. It just is the really hard Chicago accent.
Yeah, there you go.
And
I can't hear yours, Kathy. Thank Where's you. Your accent?
Well, I was born here.
She's got that stuff, man.
Oh my God, Donnie, I got to tell you, Cappies.
What?
Cappies. They're making it into a swim school. They're like building it into a swimming pool.
I used to love that place and get some pancakes.
Pancakes at Cappies.
Cappies, pancakes. Wow.
When the guys come visit me here and we go to the local places, they just marvel at the thickness of the Chicago accents. It's
I love
funny.
It, though.
Yeah.
I love
For real. Oh,
it is its own music.
It's hard to try to you know, tamp it down, but it's...
We love Chicago.
Yeah, Kathy, your accent extraction surgery went really well.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, I heard myself on audio too many times, and I said,
you can really notice it? Yeah.
Listen to yourself.
Yeah.
A voice coach, an accent coach.
Kathy, listen to yourself.
Kathy.
All right, so speaking of impersonating, you did you were able to impersonate Janis Joplin. You did Janis. How is, yeah. I mean, you do Janis Joplin, and how is Janis's voice and Grace Slick, how are they alike or different? I mean, what are the similarities between their voices? They're both powerhouses, but in different ways. How would you define that?
Yeah, I don't think their voices are similar at all. I think they're coming from two completely different directions, but they're in the same time and space in history, and as two very strong female singers that, you know, for people in my generation became like deities. Like, they are the goddesses of rock, and they are, you know, everyone, all of us bow to them, and we don't exist without them. So that's how I feel about both Grace and Janis, although, you know, having gotten into each of their different music, they're completely different. You know, Janis was from the South. She was came from nowhere, basically, Port Arthur, Texas. And she was very isolated, outsider in a small-minded world. And she learned about music by going to the library and listening to these, checking out these blues records. And she had proximity to Louisiana, and she would, you know, hitchhike, or they'd go drive over there and go listen to the blues clubs. And she was so influenced by the black music and the soul and the spirit and the plight. And she was an outsider. She was an outcast. She was, you know, ridiculed. And, you know, when she came to San Francisco, it was like, oh my God, I can be weird here and nobody cares. It's like, I'm not even weird compared to so many people here. but she sang the blues. Actually, David Freiberg was friends with him. I mean, he brought her to San Francisco. I mean, he should be talking about Janis. Musically, though, her influences were so deep into blues and black music. And Grace was a different kind of, she was like a strong singer. There was a scene happening. She was a model. She was married to a guitar player. She could sing. And I think she was into singing. She's an artist. She's, you know, a creative person, but I think she more kind of fell into it. Would you say that's true, David? Like, it wasn't a pursuit of hers or a passion necessarily that drove her to become a musician.
That's probably how she could retire.
Well, she was probably having a great time.
I like what you said about Janis, though. Like, you said that you thought she listened to the old scratchy records so much that she actually thought made her voice sound like that.
She did.
I think that's true, yeah.
She did. I swear to God, like, her brother gave me these tapes of her at the University of Texas when she used she was in the Folk Society, and she played auto harp. And sang, and she sounded, the timbre of her voice to me sounded like a phonograph, like she had created that sound of what this with the scratchy needle on the, you know, the dust and all that stuff. And because she could do different voices too. She had a lot of different voices, but that was, I think, where her sound came from.
Yeah.
And Grace, you know, I mean, Grace is just a badass. She's just, you know, she's not, in the times that I've met her and hung out with her, she's not an intimidating presence. But when she's on stage, you know, if she looked at you, you know, it might scare the shit out of you. You know?
Yes.
Because she was just, she's so powerful, you know.
Like, it's the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this wicked sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That would, I mean, we could be at Winterland in San Francisco, and everybody's trying to get in a Jefferson Airplanes dressing room. And she and her girlfriend could just get there and have a couple of drinks and start talking to people. And before you knew it, they were the only people there. where everybody wanted to be, where all the drinks were. So I don't know.
You are right. She is a badass, and it's not just the eyes and the voice, everything.
Yeah,
and
she did have a really loud voice.
Yeah,
she did. I mean, we met. They were measuring when I got in the airplane, that they were coming around with the you know, the decibel meters. Oh. Both of us could sing loud enough to pass the threshold of pain. In the same room with us.
How do you mic that? You don't even need the mic. Or... It's like the drum kit.
I don't do that.
Yeah, mic it from the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly.
Kathy can do that.
What? No.
You have a loud voice, Kathy.
I don't have a loud voice. I think if you did a decibel meter between me and David, David would be twice as loud as me.
You probably have a point there, yeah.
I do. David's I'm like, I belt it out as loud as I can.
You got the tone, though.
It's not, I don't have a ton of, I mean, whatever. If my daughter would definitely disagree. She'd be like, oh, mommy, no, not so loud.
That kind of leads me to my next question, though, about, I don't know you. I mean, we're talking, you don't have a loud, loud voice conversationally, but I wanted to ask you about this Somebody to Love for Fenway. I saw it on YouTube. Well, you were certainly belting it out.
Yeah.
How did that come to be? What were you doing that for?
I think the Dodgers were busy that day.
Watch it. Tread lightly.
You know, the quarantine had just happened and baseball was an uncertainty and Fenway didn't know what they were going to do. And they said, let's do a concert, an online concert fundraiser and ask bands who have played here before, artists who have played here before to contribute something. I've never played there. I don't know. Maybe the historic Jefferson Starship did, probably.
We did a gig for the Jimmy Fund, like for the Red Sox, but at Berklee School of Music. So we do have a relationship with them.
It's kind of right across the street from Fenway.
Mm. Yeah. Go Boston.
Well, so you know, we submitted that and they loved it and made it part of their thing, and that was really fun for us to do.
One, two, three. When the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you dies, don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Won't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love.
The first thing we did when we were quarantined and we kind of figured out how to do it. We started out with like a click track and Chris played his parts and then I sang it and then Donnie everybody
drums. Yeah, I came down
and Donnie played drums down at David's house and
using that same microphone.
Yeah.
That was the same drum, that's same mic. One drum mic. I mean, it's so weird. Wow. I don't know.
It's drums.
It's a gifted drummer.
Of control it's over
drums,
it, but like
it's the drummer.
It's amazing how good it sounds. Like it is the drummer. I mean, it's a lot the drummer and the drums. But like,
way to go,
pick it up. Like, and there it is. It just sounds good. Yeah. That is a world class drummer right there.
Yeah, Donnie knows how to tune really his drums too. Having played with a lot of drummers, Donnie knows how to make the drum sound huge. And I first started playing with Donnie back in the late '90s, and the coolest thing is he'll sometimes be like, hey, man, why don't you play my kit? It's all mic'd up through the PA, big empty auditorium or theater with whatever. And you're just like, bah! And he goes out and listens to it. And yeah, that must be a reason why they sound so good through one mic.
It is. I mean, he's a singer too. He's a very musical. So he hears the tone. And if the tone isn't happening, he's not going to be happy, you know.
Like, takes forever sometimes. That's the frustrating thing about drums. But I don't know.
Sing.
Playing for so long, I think it gets etched in your head. Mm. A lot of people, what notes do I tune to? God, you know, good question. I just know what I like to hear. I like anywhere from high end mids down to as low as you can go. But those drums at David's house, those drums have great history. And they're just those drums that, I mean, they sound good with anybody playing.
Well, tell them where they hear those drums. Tell them about the drum fills.
Well, those drums were the drums I used when I played through the 70s with the Elvin Bishop Band. They were on that big hit, I Fooled Around and Fell in Love, with the drum breaks. But yeah, they've been around forever. That drum company is Camco, but Camco sold out to DW, I think, late 70s. But yeah, those are great drums.
The ones you showed us earlier?
Yeah.
You showed us, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're not much to look at.
Doesn't matter.
Because they've been around forever, yeah. But...
a lot of history.
Sound great. And to have the one mic, it's just ridiculous. It just worked.
That's great. All right, let's switch to guitar before we wrap this up, because Jude, you nerd out on the guitar. You've got a podcast as well. Yeah. What's, you want to plug this? I was listening to this and it was too nerdy for me, but man, it's good. Just listening to Kenny Wayne Shepherd just enthusiastically talk about guitars. That was kind of cool. What is your podcast?
It's called No Guitar Is Safe, the guitar show where guitar heroes plug in. Well, you know, I take pride in the fact that it's always guitars in hand. Like, these heroes are always playing their guitars and demonstrating how they came up with stuff or what influenced them or how they play their hit songs or what exercises they do, or just give tips, or we just jam.
Then Jude plays with them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I did the first like 107 episodes. I would always go to their studio. I think about how many trips that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then now with the pandemic, we're doing a lot of stuff over Zoom. But yeah,
what's that like?
Thanks for the plug.
So when you go to them, you take your guitar. When you were going to them, do you take your guitar with you?
I always bring a guitar, but sometimes they have guitars. You know, a lot of they have the guitar disease,
yeah,
which is they have 60 or 70, and they still need one more, just one more. So we all have that disease, but yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, you guys all have that. But that's, yeah, it's fun listening to that. And you're also the editor of, which guitar magazine?
Well, for 9 years, I was the associate editor of Guitar Player. Now I'm Los Angeles editor of Guitar Player magazine. You know, I'm roving it. I contribute once a month, and they sponsor my podcast. So
that's great.
Great. Yeah.
I tell you.
That's our boy.
That's our boy.
You're in Los Angeles too?
Yeah, I got pulled down here. L.A. has a way of pulling people in, you know? Like, I came down for 2 years, and all of a sudden it's been 11 years. How'd that happen?
Music.
Yeah, music and the weather. Weather's great.
Best of everything,
And you got the Dodgers.
But I do miss the Bay.
Sorry, what? And you still got the Dodgers. And now you got the Dodgers. So, you know, that's good, right?
You know, my Bay Area friends would kill me. Maybe Donnie will, like, if the Giants are 100% out of it, and then it's like the Dodgers versus Houston, even before the conspiracy and before the cheating. I mean, I still am going to probably root for the Dodgers.
I mean, my father took me to games when we used to come over to my elementary school and pull me out of school and take me to the day games at Candlestick Park.
Oh, nice.
So I grew up with the Giants, you know, I mean, Willie Mays and
yeah,
but it's kind of, I mean, I'm kind of like a sports fan, like a Chicago fan is, you know, do or die.
Right.
I mean, I've been with them forever.
Yeah.
I have nothing against the Dodgers. I just hate them.
Yeah. I hate them, but they're like from my block. If somebody from another block is going to pick on them.
I hate them because they're always
talking about your mom.
They're like the Yankees. They're always there.
But the Giants, the Giants have more. I mean, you've won World Series lately. It's been a long time for us.
Yeah.
We're always good. We just can't win it big.
So, yeah.
You didn't just compare the Dodgers to the Yankees, did you?
No, I'm just saying that those money teams, you know, they seem to always be in the hunt.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they're rebuilding and stuff like that, you just have to take a deep breath and just kind of bear with it. But,
I like that we have a former Giant coaching them. That's cool.
Yeah. So I hope for the best. But, you know, everything's so screwed up that who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. Anyway, what we do know is Jefferson Starship is...
is happening.
Is happening. Always.
And we can look forward to seeing you live, hopefully next year.
God, hopefully, yeah, hopefully.
So, yeah.
Well,
there you go. There's your artwork from
Space Box.
Look at that. Plug away, Kathy.
Yeah, Mother and the Sun.
It has a life of its own.
This is our new record with the specialty packaging that we had custom made. It opens up from a regular size CD to a functional box.
Just blow into it and it inflates like a balloon animal.
Well, it unfolds. I could do it. This one's already done. And there's space inside. And then there's this beautiful artwork all around that was done by this young guy, Nick Moeller. This is Cassiopeia. She's a constellation, and in Greek mythology, I believe she's rolling over in the sky because she was vain. But before that, long before that, Cassiopeia is the mother of the sun and the moon. She is ether. She is the original goddess. That is what our record is named after. And this is my actual son on the cover, Hendrix. Sailing a sailboat across a sea of stars, which is very Cantoneresque imagery. And this whole thing is dedicated to Paul. All the cool space imagery and this young artist that did this art. He's maybe 21 years old. I don't think he's ever. He's definitely never seen a vinyl record before. He was like, what do I do with this? He's never made he never has done album art. He just does art. So it's so cool that he did this, and it's so beautiful. And, I hope he wins a Grammy for it.
Really lovely. I love that it's full of stars. I don't know if there's any science fiction geeks, but I know Paul Kantner was. And the big money line from 2001, A Space Odyssey, he's floating out there above Saturn. He comes up to the monolith, which is basically a cube, and he looks into it. And he's like, oh, my God, it's full of stars. So that's so cool about our box from that sort of science fiction thing. I bet Paul would have dug that.
Yeah, he would have.
Nice. So what are we waiting for? Yeah. Let's just go out and buy it. Go and get it.
Get the space box.
Mother of the Sun is the album. Jefferson Starship is the band. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun to have you guys, to have everyone here. All five of you. This is wonderful.
This
real
is
treat
such a
for
treat.
Us.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Ollie, thank you so much.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we do too. We look forward to seeing you on the road, and look forward to new music and everything. So best of luck.
Awesome.
And take care. And we'll
see. Yeah.
Lots stay busy. Fun. Enjoy. Yeah.
Further, we'll see you further down the road.
None of us were wearing any pants, by the way.
I guess.
Oh, you had to lift.
Yeah, we don't wear pants when we do interviews, just so you know.
No pants.
Good to know.
I've got no pants.
We're not either.
Doing the no pants dance. There we go. All right. Okay, so that's a quick wrap-up, and thank you so much to Jefferson Starship for taking the time out to talk with us and tell us all about Mother of the Sun. A big thank you to Eric Baker at Primary Wave Entertainment for letting us use the music. Also, JB Brenner, as always, thank you so much. We are What Difference Does It Make, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast family. Please follow us. We're at What Difference Does It Make, WDDIMPodcast.com, and all social networks. And until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.